The other good news that we got this week on Wednesday was that the NCAA announced the official start to college basketball will be the 25th of November, which we'd heard previously that it was going to be either the 21st, 23rd, or 25th. It will be the 25th. A lot of these early season tournaments are being consolidated, moved to different venues within the North American continent, or at least within the United States, as opposed to going to Cancun or Bahamas, although... Is the Bahamas, is that technically U.S., that U.S. territory? They're going to be consolidating, playing in smaller bubbles, it sounds like, although we haven't heard official announcements about that. Iowa did not have an early season tournament scheduled that I'm aware of. They had an on-campus tournament. But we shall see what we shall see. But the official start is November 25th, which means teams can get started, I believe, in October with practice. So that should be fun. We just hope we get an Iowa basketball season. The good news is next week, next Sunday evening when we record, we have the privilege of getting former Iowa basketball player Matt Gatens. He'll be on the show with us to talk hoops, to talk Drake men's basketball. He just got a promotion, and deservedly so. He's been tremendous down in Des Moines for the Bulldogs, and he'll be able to talk a little bit about the Drake basketball season as well as Fran and his squad, including Luca Garza and company. So we'll get to talk to him next Sunday and about the upcoming college basketball season. And, of course, we'll have plenty of time to break that down. We'll have our preseason basketball show at some point as well. But we've got 5 weeks, four more shows, Alex, before the official start of the season. We've got, let's see, today's the 20th. 1, 2, 3, 4. Here we got four shows. Well, we've really got three shows, then game week. So we'll spend couple of those shows, one of those shows, hopefully breaking down the roster. Of course, we'll talk basketball with Matt next week as well, and we're gonna have some fun talking about it. I'm excited, and we'll get some good guests on the show as well. So hopefully everybody's amped up to listen to the podcast, and more importantly, amped up to watch some Hawkeye football. Let's talk a little bit about college football, and as we wrap up our show here on week 127 of Brattis Branded Thoughts, Alex, it didn't seem right with Iowa not having their season going. It didn't seem right to even talk about or make our predictions for NFL games or for college football games that were happening. But the bottom line is there are a lot of college football games and college basketball games that are happening. Before we get to that and make our picks and our pick 'em segment, Alex, buzzer beater from AD. I didn't get to see it. We were recording the show. Anthony Davis just hit a buzzer beating three to win game two for the Lakers by two. The Nuggets were up by one. AD hits a three at the buzzer. The Lakers go up 2-0 in the Western Conference Finals. Your fast take reaction.
Well, he absolutely dominated in the first game, and I checked in probably an hour ago on this second game, and LeBron was the one who was the leading scorer, but, you know, AD is kind of an overlooked guy now that he's on the Lakers with LeBron. He was in the conversation for possibly being the best player in the NBA, you know, a few years ago, which nothing's really changed. He's just now not on the same team as arguably the best player in the NBA. So he's right up there as far as what he can do. You know, that's Jokic's biggest weakness is he's not a great defender. And I think you're just going to see more and more of this. You know, the Rockets weren't able to do much with him aside from the first game. And I think it's probably going to be more of the same. Now, Jokic has more size, obviously, than P.J. Tucker, whoever they have guarding him for the Rockets. But Davis is that guy that, you know, LeBron really hasn't had. Obviously, he's had Kyrie and Dwayne Wade, but AD is in his prime right now, and I'm not surprised to hear that he hit that shot. I mean, he can basically fill it up from anywhere on the floor, and they still have to be careful, though, because the Nuggets have come back from 3-1 down twice, so 2-0 doesn't seem like too daunting of a task for them right now, but I think this is a different team they're playing.
Boy, and what a heartbreaking loss to lose this game, and going down 2-0, such a killer. You're up by one. You give up a three at the buzzer to AD, and he just swishes it. Your thoughts, your predictions. Do the Nuggets push this game to 6 or 7, or do the Lakers move out in 4 or 5?
I think the Lakers get out of the series in 6 or less games. Not a real bold prediction. I'd probably bet on 6. I don't think the Nuggets push it past that. They're definitely a good team and very talented. I think they early on and in past years, they just haven't played to their potential. And we saw that against the Jazz where they lost, you know, they barely won game one, missing the Jazz, missing two of their best guys, and then get blown out. And then they just turn it around, you know, like a flip and a switch. So it seems like they are playing up to their potential now, which I think is right up there with the best teams in the West. I think they're still going to have real trouble with the Lakers. I don't see anybody beating the Lakers, to be honest, right now, but I think they will push it. I mean, Jamal Murray's almost unstoppable when he's on, and Jokic is maybe the most skilled center in the league, probably is right now. So I see them probably taking this to 6.
And breaking news for everybody that cares, I have pulled out a miraculous fantasy football victory. I was projected, I believe, 40 below, which is a major, major deficit in a league where it's hard to score above 130. And Dak Prescott, they were getting smoked by the Falcons. He comes back, throws for 450 yards, 4 touchdowns. Edwards-Helaire for Kansas City ran for just 38 yards. That helped me. Also, how about the Cardinals, Alex? We interviewed Don Shumpert earlier this year, and they smoked the Redskins, the Washington football team, 30-15, which helped because my opponent had Washington's defense. They just scored 3 points, and I had Jamal Adams as my defensive player, and I needed him to get, 12 points? And he's got 13.5 right now, 10 tackles and a sack, and I'm up right now 133.6 to 131.88, and unless he does something crazy, Jamal Adams goes backwards, I'm going to pull this thing out at the buzzer.
I know that's big news for everyone listening, but have they come up with a name? Like, I haven't been following it, but have they come up with a new Washington name? Are they sticking with that all year?
Leadership said here just about a week ago that if the fans embrace that name, they're going to stay with that name. Last week,
that's
by
like,
the way,
that's like pulled... the this would have been a good subject for the Krukos, but that's like the default name. If you're creating a team on Madden or something, the Washington football, if you don't delete in the default name and put in your own, it just defaults to football team.
Last week I had a pretty miraculous victory as well, 123.4 to 115.8. And again, this week I'm going to win in miraculous fashion. So happy about that. And one of the reasons I picked up Jamal Adams is because of Cam Newton. We're going to talk NFL scores. But again, the Lakers win game 2, 105 to 103. Of course, we saw we usually don't talk NBA this time of year, Alex, because it's usually not happening. So we're kind of juggling all kinds of things here. But let's run through other scores. Game 3 between the Celtics and the Heat. The Celtics come back to win 117-106. They needed that win because they would have fallen down 3-0. You still like the Heat? You still like them to make it to the finals, or do the Celtics have a chance now with a little momentum heading into game 4?
Well, the Celtics are a better team as far as who they have on that team. They're a more talented team, I think, but the Heat are just playing to the fullest of their potential, and they're playing beyond the sum of their parts, so to speak. So I think the Heat still win this series. The Celtics, I mean, in a way, they have control as far as they have more talent, in my opinion, and they could easily win the series. But so far, we've seen from Miami, they just fight like dogs every game, and I could see it swinging the other way, but I really think the Heat will pull it out.
And so, you do predict Lakers Heat in the finals?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the Clippers losing that series? Up 3-1 and find a way to lose. Did it not just give you, and I know you're not a Mavs fan, did it not just make you smile just to see Marcus Morris lose after he almost got into another fist fight with Paul Millsap. Did you see the fist, them going at it? He needs to be suspended. I don't know. He's like the Ndamukong Suh of the NBA.
He's getting outplayed by his lesser brother, twin brother, Markieff Morris on the Lakers, and yet Marcus is the one who runs his mouth the most.
What are your thoughts, though, on the Clippers? I mean, are they going to be able to retain? I don't know what their contracts look like, but are they going to be able to retain Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and that full roster? I mean, there's a lot of expectations heading into this year, and they didn't even make it to the conference finals. Just, I know it's a crazy year, but, I mean, to me, huge, huge failure.
Well, you got to think that Kawhi, I know he lives in, or his family's from L.A., but you got to think that from a basketball perspective, he wished he'd stayed in Toronto because they were still pretty a good team this year, even without him. And, you know, I think this has kind of been a lesson for basketball in general. We've seen this transition to small ball. And guess what? The two teams that have relied heavily on that, the Clippers and the Rockets mainly, both got smashed out of the playoffs before they should have, because they got dominated by Anthony Davis, dominated by Jokic, you know. So,
and let's be honest, again, I go back to this, I'm sour, but if the Mavs had full strength in that series, I do think they could have won that series. I would not have been surprised had they won, especially seeing how LA collapsed mentally. Dallas was playing with an injured Doncic and no Porzingis majority of that season or that series. I just think the series would have been a lot different.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that the Clippers were not nowhere near unbeatable. You know, most people, including myself, I think, predicted them to probably be the best team in the NBA coming into the season, or at some point during the regular season, I guess, but that didn't pan out. Yeah, I mean, I think the Mavericks next year, they're going to have more time to keep building on what they got. They had obviously a good showing. Porzingis is just kind of that huge question mark because he's never, so far really, he's never stayed healthy in his career. So hopefully he's not that guy that just is never able to stay healthy.
Well, he is young, all right? And this was not an injury. Now, he missed some time, but this was not an injury that, you know, a torn ACL. This was an injury that there was talk about him being able to come back had they come back to win the series. So I get what you're saying. I am concerned about his knees. That seems to be the main issue for him. But let's move on. We were talking about the NBA. I think you and I are both on the same page. I think Lakers Heat, but I could see, you know, Celtics winning this series, and I could see that series going to seven games very easily. But we'll just have to wait and see. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL, and then we will talk about college football as we wrap up our podcast. For the first time this year, Alex, we're going to do a pick 'em segment. Your thoughts? When's the last time we've done a pick 'em? I mean, we haven't really picked games since 2019.
Yeah, that's probably right. Early 2020, maybe.
So let's run through some scores from this week. Of course, week two of the NFL, the Bears beat the Giants. They moved to 2-0. Saquon Barkley, this is a blow to my fantasy football team. It looks like he tore his ACL. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? For one of the guys that was a dominant in college, the guy can't stay healthy. He had one great year, and last year was basically hurt all year, and goes in there, tears his knee out. I mean, I know it's selfish, but your thoughts on him possibly being done?
I don't know. I mean, hard to say. I didn't see that injury. You know, he's obviously a guy who has an unbelievable physical abilities, and maybe he's overstressed his joints with the amount of power that he's able to put through his body. I mean, he's just built like a monster, so who knows? You never know. Some guys are crazily durable. You know, you see a guy like Frank Gore, I remember him on the Niners just getting crushed going up the middle, and he's not a big guy, and just getting crushed over and over and still playing. And you have some guys that are never able to put it together, so who knows what all goes into, you know, durability overall. A lot of it's just luck, I suppose, but it's too bad to hear because he's a very dynamic player, and you just want to see a guy like that play.
And I wish I had more for our listeners about the Falcons Cowboys game. Alex, I was following this game for a while on Gamecast, fell asleep. Did you catch this game? Because I heard there was some rule thing that played against the Falcons that the Cowboys took advantage of, but they come back in dramatic fashion to win 40-39 in a huge comeback. Dallas moves to 1-1 and avoids an 0-2 start.
I didn't see that, no.
So Dak looks good. Tough loss for Matt Ryan and company. The Lions lose. They're 0-2 after blowing that week one game against the Bears. DeAndre Swift had a touchdown grab in the end zone, which he proceeded to drop. TJ Hawkinson had a touchdown week one. It did not matter. They are 0-2 now. The Packers are 2-0. The Jaguars are 1-1 after falling to the Titans 33-30. The Colts beat the Vikings 28-11. Bills beat the Dolphins 31-28. 49ers beat the Jets, but Garoppolo goes down, as well as Mostert. He's also down, and Bosa. So they got three of their star players out. Will Beathard be activated now to the active roster, Alex? Because Mullins came in today. But if Garoppolo misses time, you got it. Theoretically, don't you have to activate C.J. Beathard and get him ready?
Yeah, I'm not up to date on their depth chart, but where's he at?
I mean, he's been he may have been active. Actually, I take that back. I believe he was active. I think they had three quarterbacks on the active roster: Mullins, Beathard, and Garoppolo. So,
yeah.
Again, I mean, to me, that tells me he. I mean, doesn't that tell you that he's going to be the guy? He's going to be the next guy in. I'm not saying he's going to be in right now, but to me, it's pretty clear he is the next guy in.
Yeah,
the Rams. They took down the Eagles today. The Broncos lost to the Steelers. Another touchdown grab for Fant, Alex. I said to you 2 weeks ago, I said that, or a little over a week ago, I told you I thought Fant and Hawkinson, not saying it's going to happen, but I thought that those two guys could end up being the second and third best tight ends in the National Football League. And you may laugh and call me Homer. That's true. I would not be shocked by that, and that's behind George Kittle, of course. And the reason I say that is because of the athleticism of Fant, what we've seen of him so far in the NFL, and Hawkinson as well. You talked about his hands and his ability. Both guys, very good starts so far this season. Fant, again, two touchdowns. Hawkinson with a touchdown. Your thoughts on those two guys' performances thus far? Very impressive.
You said Fant had two touchdowns?
We had a touchdown last week and a touchdown today.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I think we saw a glimpse of that from Fant last year. He had some pretty notable plays, and Hawkinson's just a really solid all-around guy who's probably the best, stat-wise was the better player in college, but he's probably a little more well-rounded, but Fant is more of the athletic, receiver-type guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if both of those guys have very good careers. I'm not going to predict where they're going to end up. No more than I could have predicted where Kittle would end up. You'd think that going into the NFL that Hawkinson and Fant both had higher ceilings than Kittle. And so that just goes to show that you can't really predict much, but it's exciting to see them, getting passes thrown their way.
At Cardinals, we talked to Don Shumpert several weeks back, and I told you, Alex, I said this on the show, and I said it to him, and I know he was rowing the boat, so to speak, down in Arizona, but that's a really good football team right now. They're 2-0, 30-15. Kyler Murray has it rolling. They've got really good help at running back, really good help at wide receiver. How good can they be? I mean, they do have DeAndre Hopkins, Fitzgerald, and who's the other guy? Christian Kirk. I mean, how good can this team be?
Yeah, I think they'll be a good team. That division is, I guess, in a way, I think is a bit open. I think they have a chance to be able to make noise there. I don't think it's as cut and dry as maybe it looks on paper, but from last year's results, records, but yeah, I think they'll be a good team.
I am watching, got New England and Seattle right now. Seattle up 35-30 late in the game. Game's not over yet. The Chiefs came back. I don't know if you watched this, what an OT thriller. The Chiefs win 23-20 over the Chargers. Ravens beat the Texans 33-16, and the Browns over the Bengals 35-30. Joe Burrow does not look like he is comfortable yet. He threw the ball 61 times Thursday night. Did throw three touchdowns, but I mean, I don't know. 61 throws for a rookie quarterback, I don't agree with that. Now, the Saints do play the Raiders Monday night. We're not going to predict that game. By the way, Cam Newton just threw the ball. We've got a ball game here on NBC, folks. Of course, by the time you hear this podcast, this game will be over. But the Patriots are down 5 with 15 seconds to go. First down and 10 at the 13-yard line. Cam Newton's going to throw to the end zone. Incomplete. No flag. We've got 9 seconds to go. Second down intended for Edelman. It's 35-30 Seahawks lead here. Alex, Seahawks and Patriots have both looked good thus far. 1-0. Cam Newton ran all over the field last week. How good can the I know you like the Patriots. How good can they be without Tom Brady?
I don't like the Patriots, but I do think
they're
going
to
be.
Well, you like them to play well this year.
Right. I predicted them to be kind of a surprise, which to me won't be a surprise if they play well. But it seems like a lot of people were. And, you know, it's expected you lose a guy like Tom Brady. But, you know, in my opinion, getting a guy like Cam Newton, you're not downgrading as much as you thought. Now, of course, he's a very different player, but I think he's still got a lot of life left in him as a quarterback, and new scene, new situation for him, I think could benefit him. So I think the Patriots are pretty good, are going to be a pretty good team.
Okay. We'll keep our eye on that game. We've got a timeout right now, 9 seconds to go. Let's just stay right here and just see what happens. I would kind of like, you know, I don't like Cam Newton. Never been a big Cam Newton fan, especially when he was in Carolina. I thought he had an attitude and didn't like how he handled his Super Bowl loss to the Broncos the 1 year, but I'm kind of rooting for him. He just kind of seems like the underdog right now, and I don't like the Patriots, but there's something about this team that I sort of like. He's going to drop back. He's going to throw to the end zone. Short. A yard short. He is a yard short, and I believe they have one timeout remaining. We have, yes, one timeout. They'll take it with 2 seconds to go. They're on the 1 yard line, folks. 35-31. And they're showing the Super Bowl several years back. Patriots 28, Seahawks 24. Of course, totally different Patriots team then, but they've had a lot of close games over the years. But again, 2 seconds remaining here. First down and goal. And they're actually going to put an extra second on the clock. So it's 3 seconds remaining, and now Seattle's going to take their final timeout. So, Alex, let's go ahead and make our predictions for Week 3. Thursday night football on NFL Network, Dolphins, Jaguars, two teams that are combined 1-3. Your thoughts on this game? Who do you got between Miami and Jacksonville?
I'll go with Jacksonville.
I like Jacksonville as well. Bears, Falcons, Sunday, noon on Fox.
I'll go Bears.
I like the Falcons to get their first win of the season. I'll take Atlanta. Rams, Bills, both teams 2-0. On Fox, noon.
I'll go with the Rams.
I will go with the Bills. And by the way, here we go. First and goal. 3 seconds remaining. Patriots down 5. First and goal. Cam Newton's going to run it himself. He will not get in, and that's the game. Wow. He tries to take it himself. He gets flipped on his head. And the Seahawks have won this football game 35-30. And I'm very, very surprised at the play call from Bill Belichick. The Seahawks read that from the get-go, and it wasn't even close. Again, Cam Newton, you see it set up. And
is that in Belichick's wheelhouse? I mean, has he ever called that play ever in the last 15 years?
Yeah, that just seems a little bit odd. Are you watching this game?
I just saw the last play there.
It just seems a little bit of an odd play call from him.
Although you've seen the Patriots run that ever in the last 15 years, 20 years. You know.
But they ran a lot with Cam Newton last week. Of course, I didn't watch the majority of this game. But so the Seahawks do win 35-30. Heck of a Sunday night football game. Okay, let's get back to our week 3 schedule. Washington Browns, the football team, the Washington football team versus the Cleveland Browns, noon on Fox.
I'll go with the Browns.
I like Washington to bounce back and get a win. Titans-Vikings, noon on CBS. The Vikings 0-2, and the Titans undefeated.
Yeah, I'll take the Titans.
I like the Titans as well. Raiders-Patriots. Patriots 1-1 now, taking on, so far, 1-0, the Raiders, but they'll play Monday night as well.
I'll go Patriots.
I like the Patriots as well. Noon on CBS. How about this game? Noon on Fox. We don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for San Francisco, but the Niners will play the Giants. These two teams are combined 1-4. Or excuse me, 1-3.
I'll take San Francisco.
I will take San Francisco as well. Bengals and Eagles. No wins between these two teams. Noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Eagles.
I like the Eagles as well. Texans, Steelers. Great start for Big Ben coming back off injury. Noon on CBS.
I'll go with the Texans.
I like the Steelers here. How about the Jets and the Colts? Noon, or excuse me, 3:05 on CBS. These are all central times, by the way.
I'll take the Colts.
I like the Colts, the Panthers, and the Chargers. Chargers looked good today, but they fell to the Kansas City Chiefs in overtime, 3:05 on CBS.
I'll go with the Chargers.
I've got the Chargers as well. The Bucks and the Broncos, 3:25 on Fox.
I'll go with the Broncos.
I like the Buccaneers. How about the Lions and the Cardinals, 3:25 p.m. on Fox?
I'll go with the Cardinals.
I like the Cardinals as well. Cowboys, Seahawks, 3:25 on Fox.
I'll go Seahawks.
I like the Cowboys, Packers, Saints, 7:20 p.m. Sunday Night Football on NBC.
I'll take the Packers.
I like the Saints to win that game. How about Chiefs, Ravens? Heck of a Monday night game. Maybe the two best teams in the league right now. ESPN, 7:15 on Monday.
I'll go with the Chiefs.
I like the Ravens. All right, college football. We haven't really talked about college football these first few weeks. We've had plenty of games. We're not going to run through every game, but we are going to talk about some of the Week 3 scores. Clemson easily over the Citadel. The ACC fully underway now, their second week of action. Clemson's 2-0, 49-0 over the Citadel. We had a game between number 7 Notre Dame and South Florida. Notre Dame looked a little bit vulnerable against Duke a week ago, but no problems with the Bulls yesterday, 52-0. How about number 11 Oklahoma State, a dark horse for the college football playoff, according to many this year? They had a rough game, but they won the game against Tulsa, 16-7. Number 13 Cincinnati over Austin Peay, 55-20. Number 14 UCF, that's Central Florida down in Tampa, Orlando. They take down Georgia Tech 49-21. It's number 17 Miami against number 18 Louisville. The Hurricanes win 47-34. Louisiana, the team that beat Iowa State last week, Alex, 34-31 over Georgia State, had to come back. Georgia State took them to overtime, but the Raging Cajuns survived. Your thoughts on Iowa State last week losing? We didn't get a chance to talk about that game. How shocked were you at that? A team with all the expectations, this is the week that Iowa would have played Iowa State, and Iowa State plays host to Louisiana. Just no energy, but Brock Purdy couldn't really use his legs very well. It just didn't seem comfortable, didn't seem like they had energy, and Louisiana just absolutely obliterated the Cyclones.
It's definitely surprising. I didn't watch the game, so I can't say too much.
How did you not watch the game? And don't tell me you're not an Iowa State fan.
I haven't watched an Iowa State game other than Iowa against Iowa for probably my whole life, so...
Why? We haven't had football for 9 months, and you're sitting there. What are you doing? What are you doing on a Saturday afternoon that is better than watching college football when we haven't had college football for 9 months? Explain it to me.
What time in the afternoon?
It doesn't matter what time in the afternoon. It does not matter. You understand?
Listen, I'm not from Ames, okay? I don't care about these things like some people.
I'm not from Ames, all right?
You're okay. Funny.
Anyways, Iowa State's going to be looking to bounce back when they play their second game. Also yesterday, Appalachian State, number 23 in the country, they lose to Marshall. Marshall got into the AP top 25 this week, 17-7. That game was on CBS. Number 25, Pittsburgh over Syracuse, 21-10. There were a couple games that were canceled/postponed. North Carolina and Charlotte did not happen. BYU Army did not happen. As far as top 25 games, non-top 25 games that are of note from yesterday and this past week, Coastal Carolina, who beat Kansas week one, they beat Campbell on Friday night, 43-21. Liberty over Western Kentucky, 30-24. Navy over Tulane, 27-24. Duke falls to Boston College, 26-6. Texas San Antonio over Stephen F. Austin, 24-10. Troy over Middle Tennessee State, team Iowa played last year, 47-14. SMU beat North Texas, a couple Hayden Fry-esque teams, 65-35 in a high-scoring game, 100 combined points in that game. Louisiana Tech over Southern Miss, 31-30, and an absolute amazing finish. Alex, you got to look that game up. Louisiana Tech, Southern Mississippi last night. Texas State over UL Monroe, 38-17. North Carolina State over Wake Forest. UTEP over Abilene Christian. And Houston-Baylor was postponed. Florida Atlantic-Georgia Southern was postponed. And Central Arkansas-Arkansas State was postponed. But for the most part, a lot of games happening. Alex, your thoughts so far on what we've seen of college football? The majority of games are happening, and it seemed like this past week, week one was a little rough. Iowa State losing, Kansas State lost, Kansas lost. We had three Big 12 teams lose to Sun Belt teams. Unbelievable there. Not surprised necessarily for Kansas, as they have lost to Coastal Carolina week one, two years in a row. But if you look at it overall, your thoughts on football, it's happening. There are not these major breakouts. Again, we've had games postponed because of contact tracing, but I stand by what I said preseason, and I'm not going to get into a long discussion here as we approach hour two of the podcast, but or approach the two-hour mark of the podcast. But these games are happening, Alex, and I think that also fed into the Big Ten reversing their decision. We're not seeing these massive breakouts that some people predicted.
Yeah, I mean, the more you know, the more you can plan for things. So, I mean, the Big Ten has an advantage. Obviously, they're disadvantaged with the time frame, but they do have an advantage of being able to learn from these different schools and other schools playing. So there's, it can go both ways. I mean, it's kind of like that with the NBA. A lot of team or a lot of sports, you know, looked at them. MMA, UFC was kind of that way. We're kind of the early on sports that were showing how they were able to get done. And it's just kind of like a case study into how many cases you're going to have, how many infections you're going to have and whatnot. So it's good to know, you know, in the next 4 weeks or so, we'll know even more and we'll have a better picture of what the Big Ten season will probably end up looking like, because we'll have more data basically from these other teams.
Any surprises of note to you? I think obviously the biggest surprise across the country so far has been the Iowa State loss. I mean, we saw Appalachian State lose as the top 25 team. We saw a couple other Big 12 teams lose, but for the most part, teams have been taking care of business. Navy had an interesting week. They lose to BYU by like 50, and then they come back in dramatic fashion, overcoming a large deficit to win yesterday. But any thoughts? I think it was Tulane they played yesterday. I don't know if I read that or not, but any preliminary thoughts before we get into SEC play this coming week? And once we get into SEC play, we got three of the five major conferences playing. The Big 12 will be picking up in October. And I'm even hearing rumblings that the Pac-12 could start in October. I just don't think that's going to happen with some of the restrictions, legal restrictions for gatherings out west. But any surprises or noteworthy items that you want to point out before we make our predictions for week four?
No, I'm good.
Thursday, UAB South Alabama, ESPN, 6:30 p.m. Both teams 1-1.
Are we picking?
Yes.
I go with UAB.
I will go with South Alabama. How about Middle Tennessee and Texas San Antonio Friday night on CBS Sports Network, 7 p.m.
Middle Tennessee.
I will go with UTSA. All right. The reason we predicted those games is because they were midweek games, and Alex, you got to watch the games. If they're out in the middle of the week, we got football. Take advantage of it while you can. You cannot. Here's the thing. You need to understand that you cannot take football for granted. Because as we know, it can be gone. So I encourage you to watch UAB and South Alabama on Thursday. I encourage you to watch Middle Tennessee State and UTSA on Friday night. And I encourage you, please, I plead with you, to watch Georgia State and Charlotte, as well as Campbell, the Camels, taking on Appalachian State on Saturday. All right, let's make our predictions for Saturday. Big 12 action. Kansas State, number 3, Oklahoma. Big time game here on Fox for the Sooners. Who you got?
I'll go with Oklahoma.
I got Oklahoma as well. How about SEC opener? Number 5, Florida. At Ole Miss, ESPN, 11 a.m.
I will go with Ole Miss.
Going with the upset. I'm going to go with Florida. There is going to be, I think there are going to be upsets here, especially for some of these SEC teams. This is their week one. I think there will be upsets somewhere. I just don't know where they're going to be. Notre Dame, number 7 in the country, at Wake Forest, 11 a.m. on ABC.
I will go with Notre Dame.
I've got Notre Dame as well. How about a top 25 game here? Number 23, Kentucky, at number 8, Auburn, SEC Network, 11 a.m.
I'll go with Auburn.
I like Auburn as well. Number 13, Central Florida at East Carolina, 11 a.m. Central Time on ESPN+. Plus.
You say Central Florida?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll go with UCF.
Got UCF as well. Georgia Southern at Louisiana. Louisiana still ranked, number 19 in the country. ESPN2, 11 a.m.
I'll go with Louisiana.
I've got the Raging Cajuns. How about top 25 game here, 11 a.m. on the ACC Network, number 24, Louisville, at number 21, Pitt. Again, another top 25 game early in the day at 11 a.m. on Saturday.
I'll go with Louisville.
How about Georgia Tech and Syracuse at 11 a.m. on ESPN3?
I'll go with Georgia Tech.
I will go with Tech as well. Skipping through some of the smaller games, let's go Iowa State. TCU didn't play against SMU, so they're maybe in a funk as far as not being able to get game action in, but Iowa State already has a game in as they lost to Louisiana. This one's going to be a tough one to predict. Iowa State, TCU, and Alex, I don't know why you wouldn't watch this game. Starts at 12:30. Iowa State on Saturday down in Fort Worth. FS1, who you got? Cyclones, Horny Frogs, Horned Frogs.
I'll go with Iowa State.
I've got Iowa State. I think they bounce back as well. 2:30 p.m. CBS, Mississippi State, and number 6, LSU.
I'll take LSU.
LSU, how about this Texas rivalry? 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Fox. Number 8, Texas, at Texas Tech.
I'll go with Texas.
I'm going to go with Texas Tech. I'm going to call the upset in this one. How about 2:30 p.m. Central Time? Number 22, Army. Didn't play last week because of a postponement. They're 2-0, taking on number 14, Cincinnati, ESPN.
I'll go with Cincinnati.
I'll go Army. Should be a fun one, though, in Cincinnati. How about 2:30 p.m., West Virginia, and number 15, Oklahoma State on ABC?
I'll go with Okie State.
I like West Virginia to pull the upset. Number 4, Georgia at Arkansas, 3 p.m., SEC Network.
I'll take Georgia.
I've got Georgia as well. Duke at Virginia, 3 p.m., ACC Network.
I'll go with Virginia.
At Virginia as well. Number 2, Alabama at Missouri, 6 p.m., ESPN.
I'll go with Alabama.
I've got Alabama as well. Let's see here. Vanderbilt at number 10, Texas A&M, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. On the SEC Network alternative station.
I'll go with A&M.
Alternate, excuse me, not alternative, alternate.
A&M.
I will go A&M as well. Florida State and Miami, 12th ranked Miami Hurricanes, 6:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC. Saturday Night Football, the crew. Game day will be there. Who you got, Seminoles and Hurricanes?
I'll go with Hurricanes.
I've got Miami as well. Number 16, Tennessee at South Carolina, 6:30 p.m. on the SEC Network.
I'll go with Tennessee.
I'll go South Carolina in the upset. How about 6:30 p.m. for Kansas and Baylor, ESPNU?
I'll go with Baylor.
I've got Baylor. North Carolina State, number 20, Virginia Tech, 7 p.m. Central Time on the ACC Network.
I'll go with Vautech.
I've got Virginia Tech as well. Troy taking on number 18, BYU in Provo. ESPN, 9:15 p.m. Central Time, the late game.
I'll go with BYU.
I've got BYU as well. And Alex, we didn't predict all the games, but as we can see, a lot of games. College football is back, Alex. We've got no Pac-12 football right now. Big Ten starts next month. I think as we keep going here, we'll see what other conferences do. If they can get access to this antigen testing, which I'm sure they can, we may be able to, once we get to week 4, week 5, week 6, we may be able to have a pretty unscathed season. Your thoughts on that? I mean, the NFL's pulling it off. I know they're just 2 weeks in, but they had lots of training camp, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum. It's just exciting to see football back right now, and the numbers across the country continue to go down as far as COVID. Of course, there's some areas that are still high, but your overall thoughts on sports right now? NBA's rolling. College football is going. I know there's been postponements and cancellations. The NFL's rolling. Golf is going at the U.S. Open today. Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open. Tiger missed the cut on Friday. Everything seems to be happening right now, and we're not having a whole lot of outbreaks. I think that's a good sign.
I'd like to know, how far have you fallen that you are now covering golf and not tennis?
Okay. First of all,
no mention of the U.S. Open, the massive disqualification.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that last time. That happened like the day before we did our podcast last week, Alex, and we didn't talk about it.
Right.
So what are your – let's get your thoughts on that. So I'm not a Novak Djokovic fan, obviously. When I first saw the disqualification, I thought, you know, and I'm a tennis guy. I've watched tennis basically my whole life, played tennis. When I first saw that, I thought, that's a crappy disqualification. You cannot disqualify the number one player in the world. You got a pandemic. Some guys aren't even playing. There's no fans. You cannot disqualify him for that. And then I went back and I thought, it is the rule. And he's a bonehead. He is. That's what he is. He's a total idiot. He's a hothead. And he deserved what he got. Is it good for tennis? Not really, but I guess you're upholding the rules. I don't have a problem with it. I kind of feel like Brad – I don't know if you watch Brad Gilbert afterwards talk about it. And he kept having – who was that woman on the – not Chris McKendry. She was there too. And oh, my gosh. There's another woman on there, though, with Chris McKendry that kept talking over Brad Gilbert. Gilbert just kept saying how we need to have better replay for the umpire. And this other woman, it doesn't matter, Brad. It doesn't matter. But shut up. I don't want to hear Brad. I want to hear Brad talk. Okay, let me hear Brad talk for a second. All right? I don't want to hear you talk over Brad. All right? Brad Gilbert's been around a lot longer, well, as far as the tennis TV world, than whoever this other lady was. Anyways, I think she's a former player. I don't know. You know who I'm talking about?
No, I didn't see that.
Anyways, your thoughts on the disqualification? I thought it was sad for tennis, but I did not really feel sorry for Djokovic. I don't know if you saw. Did you see the video of the woman from the? I don't mean to laugh, but you saw the video from the wall when they show her get hit, and then she turns over and her eyes are bugging out of her head. It looks like she just.
Yes. Yeah, you know. this is what. I mirror what you said essentially to the T, most of what you said. You know, I'm not a Djokovic fan. I dislike him in general. And you know, I don't care about the argument. Oh, it's the rule. I don't care. I mean, the argument is basically, should that be the rule? I don't care what's on the books. I mean, obviously the rule is the rule. Arguing whether or not he should have been thrown out, we're talking about different things. If we're talking about, you know, basically, my argument is if that should be the rule. To me, it was not egregious enough to DQ him from a tournament. Especially
well, remember, a tournament. Well, but hold on. Remember, he hit the woman in the throat. All right? This was the woman. I know our listeners can't hear this. This was the woman. It looked like she was going to pass. She looked like she was going to die right there on the court.
Well, here's the thing. This is
I've been hit in different places with tennis ball. I've never been hit in the perfect. She must have been hit because it didn't look like she was just being melodramatic. She was hit. Must have been hit in the Adam's apple, the perfect spot. Well, not Adam's. She's a woman. But anyways, she was hit in the perfect spot in her throat to where she just looked like she was gonna keel over. Well, she did keel over, actually.
Yeah. Well, here's what I thought. Okay, first of all, these lions. She was a lions woman, right? Okay, when they sign up for that job. They, I'm sure, probably signed something, but they are expecting to get hit because they get hit by serves all the time, which are coming a heck of a lot faster than that shot. Now, obviously, that went into her throat, and I have
doesn't matter in the throat during the course of play. Though he hit it out of anger, he hit it out of frustration.
I know, but
doesn't really matter
to me. Her reaction was. I felt was overly dramatic. Okay, I understand. I understand that hurts. I was drilled in the throat in the exact same way by an overhead playing doubles point blank in a meet one time, and it was about three times faster than that shot that Djokovic hit. And yes, it hurt. It's definitely not a great place to get hit, but her reaction to me didn't fit. Okay. Obviously, she wasn't ready for it.
It doesn't matter what her reaction was.
That was the first thing I noticed. So,
and it was the first thing I noticed. The other view.
It wasn't a line
her
drive.
Eyes were just, her,
I know. And then she's looking back at him. She's looking back at Djokovic like he did it on purpose, like he was trying to kill her or something, you know? It's like she got hit by a bullet or something. It's just ridiculous. So,
okay, can I ask a question? Have you noticed that all the craziest crap happens at the U.S. Open? It doesn't happen at any other tournaments or Grand Slams.
Yes, other countries got their crap together.
It's always the U.S. Open. It's Serena Williams threatening to kill the ball girl or the lineswoman, right? She threatens to kill her, and then she says, "It's because I'm a woman. You're gonna do it because I'm a woman." And then you've got Novak Djokovic getting disqualified. You've got Roddick going at that one Lions woman because she called a foot fault on him, and she said it was with his right foot. All right, we've got the crap at the U.S. Open years ago. Well, involving Roddick and all the players with the water. Remember, all the courts were seeping with water, and they sent him back out there. And you know, it just seems like the U.S. Open is constantly having these issues. I don't understand it. And you always get to see Brian Early, always coming out, even though who cares? Nobody even, you know, he's the only referee that we know because he's the only tournament where we constantly see the referee come out.
He always looks like Big Bird, too.
Anyways, so I thought it was interesting. I will say this. The precedent was set when David Nalbandian got disqualified for kicking that wall.
Well,
the precedent was there because he was not trying to hurt. It doesn't matter how. Yes, I know the guy was bleeding and it was more severe, but the guy, he was not meaning to hit the guy. Kicked the thing. It hit him. He's disqualified. You cannot disqualify Nalbandian and not disqualify for Djokovic.
Here's my question. This is where I think it is different. Do you honestly think that Nalbandian, when he kicked that, honestly, he thought that he wasn't going to make contact with that with the linesman? Because
it doesn't matter what he was thinking. His intention, whether it was out of anger, his intention was not to
I don't know
no, it was not
I don't know that
him.
He was trying to hurt him, but maybe, because I mean he would have to be so stupid to kick that thing so close. That thing was inches from the guy's leg, and to think that it's not going to go into his leg, he would have to either be so stupid or malicious. And I don't think he's that stupid. I can't imagine anyone being that stupid. That's where I thought it was different. To me, the Nalbandian thing is like, if Djokovic had looked at that woman and popped the ball over there like he did, that would be more of the same thing. But I don't think, Djokovic, I don't think, knew that ball was going to go anywhere near anybody. Where Nalbandian, can you honestly say that he didn't?
I don't think that's the point. If you watch that match, he hit a ball with extreme anger into the sidewall. A lot harder than he did there. He hit a ball on the sidewall probably 10 minutes prior, pissed off, didn't get a warning, didn't get a a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and then he did it again. And I know the second one wasn't as bad, but it hit somebody in the throat, and whether it's his intention or not, you're DQ'd. You're done. Well, I mean, that's it.
Here's the thing, though. Here's another thing is, Nalbandian, I don't know if you remember this, but Nalbandian was not apologetic. Like he was arrogant after that thing. You know, it was different. I don't think Djokovic had any malicious intent. Whereas I think you could make the argument that Nalbandian possibly did. And if he didn't, then he's just the dumbest guy alive. And I just don't think that was the case. So I think they are different. I don't think it was anywhere near as egregious as the Nalbandian thing. Plus, I know. You know, the rules are probably the same. I'm not sure what the rules are exactly, if they're ATP rules or tournament rules, but one is a Grand Slam and one is a tune-up or whatever that was with Nalbandian. So, to me, I thought the DQ was over the top a little bit. I'm not sure what it should have been, but it was just real. When I saw that, I just couldn't believe it because I saw it pop up on the national news or something and then watched it on YouTube, so...
I do want to play something for you here, and of course our listeners won't be able to hear it. But this is, let's see if I can find it here. Maybe you've seen this before. Let's see here.
You know what Roddick would have said if he'd done what Djokovic did, right? Said, come on now, it came down so soft.
Person caught it like this. And you notice when what that incident was with Roddick? Guess where that was?
I don't remember.
US Open series. It's like always culture. It's always the US Open crap. Anyways. That's US Open series. Anyways, I want to share this. This is a challengers match between Darian King. Now, you've probably seen this, but I don't know if you've ever heard the guy that does a lot of these commentating for challenger events. As soon as Darian King throws his racket and it hits the wall and then ricochets and barely taps this woman and she falls over, I love the reaction. The commentator just says, oh boy, I think we're done here. You know, just as soon as it happens, watch this. Find it here.
You're not sharing your screen.
Okay. You see it now?
Yep.
All right. Wow. Oh no. Okay, I think we're done. Yep. Boy, that is just brutal. King throws his racket into the tarp. It lands on our lines person, who then collapses, her right knee buckling.
Here it is again.
Here we go. Yeah, so.
Yeah. That's way too close to her. Ridiculous. Why she went down, I'm not sure.
I don't either. Watch.
Yeah, we'll take one more look at it here.
Okay.
So he throws the racket into the tarp. Does it catch her? It catches her in the back. Oh, it looks like the tarp actually kind of snapped back into her. The racket catches her as well.
Okay, just listen again to the reaction of the commentator. As soon as it happens.
Wow. Oh, no. Okay, I think we're done.
But what's with the woman? She falls down for no reason, then her leg flies up in the air. What is that? She got hit by the foot. Oh, her knee buckle. Why did her other leg fly up in the air? Give me a break.
Oh, boy. I think we're done.
I'm
but
sure
you notice
they
how quick it was? They didn't even need to...
That's because she went to the ground. If she hadn't gone to the ground, it wouldn't have been such an over-the-top reaction from the commentator.
No, but he just... It's funny, he just... The point is over, the point's done, and we're in the second set, and then, okay, I think we're done. Although, if you look at the score...
I said that a couple times playing tennis. I got DQ'd one time in doubles. Wasn't my fault, but a similar thing where my partner kicked his racket, drop-kicked it, hit the net, and the stupid racket crawled up over the net and went on to the other side, and I thought, okay, we're done. We got DQ'd.
Okay. So anyways, all right. So we've talked about college football, Alex, the SEC's back. We talked about sports at nauseam. Anything else before we wrap up this week? We are going to release this podcast in two different parts. We're going to talk, of course, about the Big Ten's decision, and then we'll release part two of our podcast. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this thing up? We will have plenty of time to talk about college basketball on future podcasts.
No, nothing I can think of.
Your thoughts on Oliver Martin transferring to Nebraska? Let's get that real quick.
I'm not terribly surprised. I mean, we see guys, we know this is a very loaded wide receiver core, and you know, he's a guy that had a lot of hype coming into college and coming into Iowa, and he probably thinks that he's got a better chance playing somewhere else. I'm not sure what his motivations are, but, you know, it's never good to lose a guy, but he's not a guy who ever saw the field, really. We thought he would probably be a factor, and he, you know, he had one touchdown, I think, but that was just kind of, you know, he came in at the very end of a drive and got a TD, so it's unfortunate to see him go somewhere else. I'll be interested to see. I actually am curious as to how he plays going forward, because he, you know, just kind of underperformed at, was it Michigan and then at Iowa, so it'll be interesting to see how he plays.
I don't know if he's playing. Haven't heard if he was granted immediate eligibility or not, but I guess I'm just trying to figure out. He is walking on to start, so I'm assuming that means he can play right away. I don't know exactly, but if he's not, there had to have been something that didn't work at Iowa, because Brandon Smith and Mir Smith-Marset are gone after this year. Now, he could have been thinking, well, the season's going to be canceled and they'll get an extra year of eligibility. That might be an issue as well. But those guys are going to be gone, and Tyrone Tracy and Rico Reganey, are Tyrone Tracy, that, see, this is my thing, and I don't want to get into a whole other discussion, but are those two guys, like, without Smith and Smith-Marset, can Reganey and Tracy be the two main receiving threats? They just don't seem, Tracy, they're both undersized, and I feel like they're both natural slot players. Can you see those guys being natural top two targets for an Iowa squad moving forward? I just feel like they need a third guy, really, to make a complete squad without an athletic freak like Smith-Marset or Smith.
Well, I think they obviously do need a third guy, but, you know, we, at Iowa, having those two guys as your main two guys doesn't seem that out of place for Iowa football. I mean, assuming they progress somewhat, you know, they've been solid guys, and we're not used to having this kind of talent that we're seeing this year and last year at wide receivers. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know. I'd like to know what Martin's motivation was exactly, but it's all speculation, I guess.
I do think we're going to need to see a guy step up who maybe we didn't expect. Maybe that'd be Charlie Jones, the wide receiver transfer from Buffalo. And we'll talk about wide receivers on future podcasts, but they need somebody. Maybe one of the kids from Largo. I think they've got a couple of receivers from down in the Florida area. One of those guys needs to step up and maybe make a move to get some playing time this year, because that third wide receiver spot is going to be open next year without Smith-Marset. And we're not even talking about probably the fifth guy on the depth chart this year is Max Cooper. I mean, without Oliver Martin, and Cooper was returning punts last year, I think it's Max Cooper. So he's going to be graduated as well. So, you know, I was going to have to figure out wide receiver depth this year. I mean, they're very deep this year, but they want to be able to prepare for next year. And same goes for running back. They're going to be missing Mekhi Sargent. We assume Ivory Kelly-Martin will stick around unless he were to decide to transfer. We kind of thought he may have transferred last year. But they're going to have to figure out depth there. Is it Shadrick Byrd maybe steps up at receiver? That he's an option. They've got the kid from, what is his name? I don't even know why I'm trying to think of it. Gavin, what is it? Gavin Williams? Gavin, I don't know. Kid from, I think he's from Iowa, right? From Des Moines. They've got guys, but they're going to have to figure out depth. Maybe it's Brody Brecht from Ankeny next year. I don't know if you've been following the kid from, I think it's Missouri or Kansas that transferred up here, high schooler, transferred up to Ankeny because he wanted to play high school ball, and Iowa Athletic Association ruled him ineligible. Patrick Mahomes has gotten involved and said he should be allowed to play. You know, there's lots of, or that's Arlen Bruce, by the way, that's up at Ankeny. But they got options, but they're going to have to figure out depth this year, because certainly they're not going to have as much wide receiver depth, losing four receivers in the course of a few months with Oliver Martin, Max Cooper, Amir Smith-Marset, and Brandon Smith. But we hope Kelton Copeland, as the wide receiver coach, has built something now. He's had a chance to establish himself, and boy, what a hire. Let's give Ferentz and the staff credit. They went out and got Kelton Copeland. So far, so good with this guy. I mean, they had so many struggles under Greg Davis, wide receiver, and really throughout the Ferentz era, besides, you know, the DJK, Marvin McNutt years, and yet they've got a stacked wide receiver group. So I think we should have faith in what he's able to build, and I'm sure he's got a plan for the future.
Yeah, this is definitely a different feeling year as far as those positions than any other year I can remember. So it seemed like they'll be at full strength. It's funny how our, at least my perception of Amir Smith-Marset changed just from the bowl game. Like, if he hadn't had that standout bowl game, I think, I mean, we knew he was a good player, but he just ran all over. He ran, was it USC?
Yeah.
He just ran all over that team.
Well, and he almost had a pass. Remember, he almost had that passing touchdown? He should have had that passing touchdown. And just out of the reach of Brandon Smith. If he can play like he did against USC and Brandon Smith's healthy, what the heck? What the heck? I mean, these guys are going to be jumping over guys. I mean,
yeah, I remember them saying
how much firepower they have.
The commentator saying, I can't remember what it was exactly. Something about USC just has no answers for Iowa's offense or something. Like, yeah. Okay, if you played that 10, 15 years ago, back when USC was a juggernaut, can you imagine that same call? I mean, it doesn't even seem real.
Well, Iowa's offense wasn't that great all last year, but I will say this. They go up against some of the best defenses in the country, and I think we can all agree to that. That's one of the reasons Iowa's offense struggles at times is because, not because they're bad, and we've seen them have pretty good performances in bowl games offensively. We've seen that against USC. We saw it, I think for the most part, we saw it against Mississippi State. We thought Mississippi State's defense was great, and I think Iowa put up a decent amount of points, although they didn't run the ball very well in that game. But, you know, South Carolina back in 2010, they put up a decent amount of points. Missouri 2011 or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying they're scoring 50 points a game like they did against USC, but yeah, they can score points. And I think this year they're equipped to be able to handle these Big Ten defenses. But as we saw last year, defensive lines are really good. We've got Don Brown's defense at Michigan. Thankfully, Iowa doesn't have to play Michigan this year and have to deal with you know, that attack, but they do have to play Penn State. And that's the game, that Penn State game at Penn State. Robert Windsor ain't there anymore, but they've still got really good defensive players, and Penn State's projected to be even better. So they got to figure out the offensive line, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about it on future episodes of the podcast. Well, we appreciate Alex Bratta joining us. We will have Matt Gatens on the show next week. We are excited to talk to Matt about Drake basketball, Iowa basketball, and college basketball in general. I do want to ask him a question. I was down at the driving range at Toad Valley Golf in Pleasant Hill this past week. I didn't run into him, but he was there at the driving range, showed up a little bit after I started teeing off. Brady Ellingson, Alex. And, of course, Brady played a couple years at Iowa, transferred to Drake, had a great senior year, was a grad assistant last year, and he actually just got promoted to the position that Gatens had occupied previously, as I think it's director of basketball operations at Drake. But what's interesting is I'm watching Brady Ellingson. He was there with his wife, and I'm watching Brady Ellingson tee off. You can tell he doesn't play a whole lot of golf, but he's teeing off left-handed. So I'm thinking, I got to ask Matt Gatens this, not to sound stockish, but why was he teeing off left-handed? Is he left-handed? Is he playing basketball with the offhand? I just thought that was interesting. I know some guys do that in tennis. I think Rafael Nadal's right-handed. He plays left-handed, but I just thought that was weird that he was teeing off left-handed. At golf?
Yeah.
I just saw him teeing off. He didn't look great. no offense. I didn't really watch him. I wasn't like staring at him or anything. I just saw a couple drives, and he grounded a couple. So I don't think he golfs a whole lot.
Maybe he just couldn't find any right-handed clubs.
Yeah, because it's hard to find left-handed clubs. So that's right. Anyways. I'll have to ask Matt Gatens that question. Anyways, all right. For Alex Bratta, I'm Corey Bratta. This has been week 127 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts, part one and part two. We will talk to you next week on week 128, where we have Matt Gatens join us to talk college basketball and plenty of time in the next 4 weeks to talk Iowa and Big Ten football. The Big Ten's back, baby. We are back, and the Hawkeyes are ready to take the field. They'll be ready October 24th on the road at Purdue. We'll talk to you next week on week 128. This has been Bratta's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you soon. Take care, stay healthy, and go Hawks.